This is Amarins. Hello again. It's a beautiful sunny Saturday afternoon here in Auckland. My name is Arthur, and I'm a gay American now living in New Zealand. And this is episode 41 for Saturday, September 29th, 2007. I hope you're well. I'm well. Feeling a little bit laid back today because it's such a beautiful afternoon. Done some washing, done some shopping, all the usual sorts of Saturday things. This past week was New Zealand's birthday, sort of. Dominion Day was on Wednesday the 26th, and it marks the date 100 years ago when New Zealand became a dominion instead of a colony. And theoretically, it's a step along the road toward full independence and so on, except that New Zealand had already been largely self-governing since the 1850s. So it was more a change in name more than anything else. Well, in 1931, the British Parliament passed the Statute of Westminster, which was intended to transfer sovereignty to the dominions. However, New Zealand didn't ratify it until November 25th, 1947. And, of course, at that point, New Zealanders became citizens of New Zealand and not British subjects. But that's only 60 years ago. So you can sort of see why New Zealand often talks about itself as being a young nation. As it happens, though, true independence didn't really start to progress until the 1970s, when Britain entered the common market and effectively cut the apron strings, because after that point, New Zealand no longer had automatic access to British markets and had to compete in the world economy. Of course, nowadays, New Zealand steers a pretty independent course, all of which kind of raises the question, is New Zealand going to be a republic? And I've mentioned this in passing in the past. And the thing is that I think that one day it will become a republic. The leaders of all of the major parties agree with that. But it's unlikely to happen anytime soon, almost certainly not while Queen Elizabeth is alive, unless possibly Australia becomes a republic first. But it's not on any party's agenda at the moment, so there won't be any, there's no imminent change. Now, the Prime Minister, Helen Clark, has suggested that the New Zealand flag could be changed to drop the British Union Jack, and that would leave only the, as she calls it, rather attractive Southern Cross. Of course, a lot of people don't like that idea any more than they like becoming a republic, or for that matter, any other change to the flag. But my guess is that the flag isn't likely to change any more quickly than the head of state. But it is possible that changing one may lead to changing the other, but only time will tell. But I think that probably both will change in my lifetime, certainly. Now, this is also New Zealand Book Month, so I decided, a little late, to put a poll on my blog asking which, if any, of the New Zealand authors listed that you've read. Now, you don't need to have finished what you were reading, just started it. So if you haven't read any of them, go ahead and put that. But if you've started reading something, just even the first few pages, go ahead and put that down, because I'm afraid that I would probably fall into that category on several of those authors. But that's the way it goes. Now, there was one thing in the news I wanted to talk about, and that was that this week I heard that Bush has promised to veto the extension of the S-CHIP insurance program. And if for some reason you don't know what that is, essentially it provides health insurance to the children of poor people who otherwise can't afford private health insurance, but their parents make too much money for them to qualify for Medicare. Is it Medicaid? I always get those two mixed up, but you know what I mean. Now, he believes that private insurance is the only acceptable form of health insurance, and he's convinced that insuring children of the poor and working class people will, well, basically that's the first step on a slippery slope towards socialized medicine. And he also doesn't like the fact that it'll be funded out of an increase on taxes on tobacco. Now, to me, this is yet another example of why that man is an idiot, because 1 month of the spending on his Iraq war would more than fund S-CHIP. Now, here in New Zealand, no one needs to go without health care. And no one will ever be bankrupted because they get sick or have an accident. Now, critics, especially among neoconservatives in America, say that national health schemes like New Zealand has ration health care. But, you know, so does private health insurance systems like the U.S. has. In the U.S., if you don't have insurance or enough insurance, or if you're not rich, you're probably not going to get the health care. In New Zealand, the rationing takes place by putting people on waiting lists for procedures. And where you are on the list depends on a lot of things, like how serious your condition is, the likelihood for success, the difference to your quality of life, those sorts of things. But most people get most of what they need in a timely manner, and they don't get handed a bill when they leave the hospital either. Of course, we pay for all of that through our taxes, but we don't pay for wars, so maybe we have a bit more available than the U.S. does. But it's a lie that national healthcare systems provide substandard service, or that America's is always better than other countries. Because, I mean, after all, I mean, like I was saying before, what good is the best healthcare available if you can't have it because you can't afford it? I mean, let's get real here. Oh, and speaking of health, did you happen to see the story about the brain-eating amoeba? It's an AP story that was on Yahoo. I'm not going to bother putting a link in the show notes because it'll probably be gone by the time you get there anyway. But the lead sentence is, "It sounds like science fiction, but it's true. A killer amoeba living in lakes enters the body through the nose and attacks the brain where it feeds until you die." And which sounds weird enough on its own, but it says, according to the CDC, the amoeba, called Nuglaria fowleri, killed 23 people in the United States from 1995 to 2004. And this year, health officials noticed a spike with 6 cases, 3 in Florida, 2 in Texas, and 1 in Arizona. The CDC knows of only several hundred cases worldwide since its discovery in Australia in the 1960s. Apparently, it's a heat-loving amoeba, and it does well as water temperatures go up, which, of course, is happening as global warming sets in. The water temperatures go up, the amoebas do well and take over. And they have no idea why it tends to primarily affect boys and young men. They think it could be because boys are more boisterous or whatever, but they just don't know. But it says that once infected, most people have little chance of survival. Some drugs have stopped the amoeba in lab experiments, but people who have been attacked rarely survive. Usually from initial exposure, it's fatal within 2 weeks. Yes, well, maybe it would be good to go to something a little bit lighter now. I'm going to move on now to the comments, because this is going to be a short episode. And this is for episode 40, which is called No Way, which is my first episode that I could record after my internet access was restored, which, by the way, seems to be ticking along fine. Anyway, first up was Will Raddick, who's of the Raddickcast and also co-host of Callbox 7, another of my favorite podcasts. And he said, "Hey, Arthur, you mentioned the spring cleaning days in Northern Illinois and immediately made me homesick. We knew the date for the spring cleaning day at our town and everyone nearby, and we called them get-it days. We'd get as many friends as we could with different cars and go on a crazy scavenging bender to see who could get the most awesome stuff. I think the last time I went before I moved away, I got a stand lamp, a plastic toy castle, a huge box of unopened smaller boxes of tissues, which were apparently promotions for some pharmaceutical company meant to be given away at trade shows, and a bunch of other wonderful crap. My friend found a wheelchair. Yeehaw! Hooray for spring cleaning day!" And I said, "I fondly remember that scavenging. In Chicago, I once found a great cart to put my microwave on, lots of smaller stuff, too. But in northeastern Illinois, I mostly remember it as a time to get rid of stuff, and I can't tell you how glad I am that to know what happened to my wheelchair." I am kidding. Next up was Eric from Confessions of a Southern Boy in Yankee Land, another of my favorite podcasts, one of my new favorite podcasts, who said, "You are a sweetheart. Thanks for the huge plug. I greatly appreciate it. Good episode again, by the way, especially your discussing of the UN. And I said, "I plug the podcasts I like, and especially if there's something on an episode that I want to mention. I hope you're enjoying all the new connections, because I think the sense of community is great." Actually, he mentioned on his most recent episode that his numbers of downloads had suddenly skyrocketed, and he wondered where he got mentioned somewhere and thought it could be me. And while I'd love to take credit for it, it's probably not from me. It's probably something else. But I've liked all of his podcasts so far, but in this particular episode, he talks about the issue of compromise and about Blue Dog Democrats as well. But speaking of compromise, about how there really is no useful compromise with the right wing, because no matter how much the left, the center and the left, give up to try to win a compromise with the right, it's never enough. And the prime example of that was with the Episcopalians, or Anglicans in America, who recently decided that as a compromise they would say that they would exercise restraint in ordaining gay clergy. But that's not enough for the right. They want an outright ban on gay clergy, and they want an outright ban on the performing of same-sex blessings of same-sex relationships. And what Eric was saying, and I fully agree with him, is that at the end of the day, compromise is futile because the right will never be satisfied, and all that ends up happening is that the center and the left keep giving more and more and more and get absolutely nothing at the end of it. And this is actually coming up in America now with the ENDA legislation before Congress, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, I think it stands for. There's a move by some activists to drop transgender people from the bill, thinking, well, we could get this through now and then later add transgender people. And other people, the HRC is one of those that seems to be backing dropping of transgender people. Whereas on the other hand, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force has said absolutely not. We've got to go for the whole thing at once. And I can see the point of the conservagays, as they're sometimes called, that it's best to get through what we can and then try to get something later. I understand where they're coming from. But this gets back to that whole issue of compromising with the right wing. It doesn't matter if the gay leaders cut loose transgender people on their own and just try to go for just gay and lesbian people. It's not going to make it any easier to pass or any more likely to pass. Because the fact of the matter is that the Democrats of the center and left do not have a majority in Congress and haven't for a very long time. A lot of the Democrats in Congress are blue dog Democrats who vote Republican far more often than they vote Democratic. And Bush has vowed to veto it. So it doesn't really matter. If you cut off the transgender people, it's not going to pass. So what's the point of the compromise on this? We gain absolutely nothing, but we sacrifice our core principles. And I say, leave it as it is, go through, and it will go down, so we might as well go down in flames. You might as well go down doing the right thing rather than trying to strike a compromise with the devil. But that's my opinion. I'd be interested to know what you think about that. Anyway, next up was Archer, another of my favorite podcasts, this is getting to be a theme, who said, yeah, what those two said above. Then he said, glad to hear you're back with the internet access. It really sucks not having a connection. I hate when that happens. And I said, now how come I never thought of saying that in your comments section about, yeah, what those two said above? Just goes to show why you're the godfather. And Archer hates it when we call him the godfather of podcasting, which is, of course, why we call him the godfather of podcasting. Well, that and the fact that he's been around for a long, long time. His podcast, that is. He's not that old. He's younger than me. Anyway, I said, seriously, I'm more glad than I can say that the interwebs seem to be back. And finally was Calvin, another one of my favorite podcasters, fellow waffles, who said, that whole internet thing, access thing, sounds terrible. What would you expect of a third world country, though? Yes, well, he goes on, I thought it was interesting how you said that all the hyphenation keeps us at war. I think it's just the opposite. I'd much rather hear gay American over faggot, or African American over nigger, or Asian American over chink, Mexican American over spick. Sure, there's no European American because being white is considered the norm and invisible, hence the recent growth in critical white studies. This is a long and drawn out way of saying that the hyphens are an attempt at understanding, and certainly an improvement over what we had in the past. I think the farming thing sounds quite self-serving, and I already looked at your post a long time ago. I thought it would frustrate you by not saying anything about it, in the same way it took you forever to post it. And I said, I completely agree with you about hyphens. When I said that people need to get over them, I meant they need to relax. I think that keeping our multiple identities makes life more interesting and exciting. If anything, celebrating diversity like that ought to make wars less likely, because there'd be a greater chance we'd have something in common with others. So now I know why no one commented on that post. What I'm talking about is the post that was called, what the heck was it called? Oh, iMac Spell, where I posted the first ever photo of me in my blog and nobody commented on that. And so that's what he's talking about. But then he also came back and he posted a second comment about my poll. And he said, oh, And if you don't vote for Hello Kitty, I curse you to never find a good parking. I curse that your shoes will always come untied. May you have scabies that are incurable. May your breath be marked by the stench of halitosis, and may no one ever talk to you at parties. And I said, apparently your curse worked. Not only did Hello Kitty win the poll, but the votes doubled after the curse was laid. Which is actually true. I'm not making that up. But the question was just simply, who's toughest? And it was clearly a very challenging and serious poll. And the results were that Hello Kitty got 4 votes and Linus got 2 votes, which is 66% to 33%, if you really want to know. Ziggy and Kathy got none, which this figures, I suppose. And when I was putting it together, I honestly was originally going to put in some others, like Powder Puff Girls, but I couldn't remember if it was Powder Puff or if it was 2 words or 1 word, so I thought, screw it, I'll just stick with the ones that I know. But I actually did put Hello Kitty in there specifically for Calvin and Calvin's friends because I thought that it would be a good test to see how loyal Calvin's friends are. Apparently quite loyal. And it's actually the only one of these polls I voted in. And I couldn't possibly reveal who I voted for except that it was a winning vote, shall we say. I already mentioned the poll. One other thing I wanted to mention is the Frapper map, which I haven't talked about in a long time. But I just happened to notice the other day that a new one had popped up, who's Deborah from Rohnert Park. I think it's Rohnert. I don't know how to pronounce it. Rohnert Park in California. Welcome, Deborah. Welcome to the map. By all means, do put your pin on my map. There's no significance to it whatsoever, as you probably know by now. But it's just a bit of fun, and I do keep forgetting to mention it. One thing that has been mentioned by several podcasters recently is reviews on iTunes. And I keep forgetting to mention that, yes, I too would like iTunes. I believe I'm up to 7 or 8 now. I've forgotten off the top of my head. The more I get, obviously, the better it is, because that means that you get higher in the rankings on iTunes. And the rankings themselves don't matter so much, but when people are looking specifically for my podcast, they're more likely to be able to find it easily. That's what it's about for me. Also, on Podomatic, I tend to be listed first in the personal journals category among Podomatic podcasts specifically. And although actually Confessions of a Southern Boy in Yankee Land is nipping at my heels there, so apparently with Podomatic, the more people who access your site, mine's amarins.podomatic.com, or through a player, like I have it on my MySpace page, that helps your overall rankings somehow in some vague way. It has something to do with whether you're featured or not. I don't quite get it. But I, as you know, haven't done much of anything to promote the Podomatic site at all. You can get to it through my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, because there's a link on the right-hand side. If you go down far enough, I'm just going to scroll. Oh, my other links. You'll see Podomatic page. And that's how you can get to it. And of course, whenever I post the show notes on my blog, I also try to include a link where you can go directly to the file so you can download it from the web page. Which, as I understand it, is the way that Mike Hipp gets the podcasts that he listens to. He doesn't use a podcatcher, which I find fascinating considering how many he must listen to. It must take forever to get all the podcasts. But be that as it may, that is it for this bright, sunny Saturday afternoon edition of the Amarins Podcast. Do leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com. And if you want to send a comment by email, just put comment in the subject line, and I'll know to read it with the other comments in my next edition. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'll talk to you next week. Bye.